On this episode of Interview in Indies, we talk to Kenny Lee, the lead programmer and co-founder of Cellar Door Games. We talk about their studio's rich 15-year history and, of course, Rogue Legacy 2. If you want to get the episodes early and support the show, you can subscribe to us on Patreon. And, of course, enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to Interview in Indies Episode 8. I'm the host, Burr, and today I'm hosted by lead programmer and co-founder of Cellar Door Games, Kenny Lee. Kenny, thanks for taking the time and joining the show today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
With every show, I always like to start with the most basic question, and it's just, how did you get into game development? What's the story there?
My path to game development is pretty slow, I guess. I've always wanted to do it, but I actually, you know, there's lots of trouble with getting that kind of a job in the city that I live in, which is Toronto. At the time, there was basically no options, so I just basically started my own thing. It actually started with an idea from my brother. He emailed me when I was at work, and it was a silly game about a guy trying not to poop his pants. That was the premise, and then we turned that, like, the moment he said that, I was like, I got to make that game, even though I had no experience with making games, right? And so we just picked up in Flash, found a place that actually sold Flash games, or at least licensed them. And and we put it up on there, and I guess the rest is history. Like, if you want a detailed thing, it's, we had a bunch of Flash games, and then eventually that sort of...
It snowballed into bigger and greater things.
Yeah.
So your first game was Don't Shit Yourself. We can just say that.
I didn't say Don't Shit Grants. Okay. How about
you can say anything. I've looked at all your past games. There's a lot of them, a lot of interesting ones too. When did the name Cellar Door Games, when did that become like an official studio, I guess? How many Flash games did it take?
It's like 4 or 5 Flash games, I think. By the time I'm trying to remember. It's been a while. But I think before Flash, we actually made... It was DSYP, which is Don't Shit Your Pants. That was the first thing. And then after that, it was like nothing. Like, because we thought it was fun. We decided to go our own ways. And then I got another job somewhere. And then we met some friends. And then we got together to try making some... We made a little demo called Band of Bears, which was part of the competition that Microsoft was hosting called Dream Build Play. That went nowhere. And then we made some iPhone games that went nowhere. That didn't do so well. And then finally, we went back to Flash. And the Flash scene was like really, really popular at the time. That seemed to fit us really, really well. And then that kind of was like, oh... We can make a living off of this. So we incorporated the business, made Cellar Door Games. And so that was like 15 years ago now, I think 2009. So it's been a while.
15 years. Yeah. How did you make money with Flash games? Because I'm only like 27, so I didn't really play too many Flash games growing up. But where was the money behind that?
I didn't know this at the time. We just made them because like it was the easiest platform to make games on. And there was this place called Flash Game License. I don't know if it exists anymore, but the way it worked is you make a game, you post it on that site, and there would be like sponsors. So there was a big Flash game website portals at the time. There was like Kongregate, there's Armor Games, there was Newgrounds, and they would bid for the game. And when you win the license, or if they win the license, then you would put all of their like advertisement into your game. There'd be a little like commercial at the start saying licensed by Newgrounds or whatever, and then they'd get to exclusively host it on their site, and then they'd pay you money for that. So that's how we made our living in the beginning.
That was making a living too. It paid that well that early.
No. That's kind of why we left early. But like it was quite a thrill to see, because it was an auction house. And they would be auctioning for your... And sometimes you would get into, like, a bidding war. And it felt really, really good to see these big players, like, bidding higher and higher amounts of value for the game that
you... For your little tiny Flash game that you made. I did play a few of them. Like you said, you had a bunch of iPod games. Why do you feel like that went nowhere? What was the market like for iPod games back in 2009, 2010?
It was for the iPhone, and it was relatively new in the iPhone's market. But even by then, it was like 2 years after the iPhone came out, and the market was already having like 600 games a day. It was just so saturated. So we released a few games. They didn't go anywhere in the sense that they just didn't sell. Like, we made one game for like a buck, sold like, I don't know, a couple hundred copies. And then we sold another game for free, and that did even worse. So we're like, okay, yeah, iPhone's not the place for us. But that was a time when there were some really big iPhone games. It's just like it was very, very feast or famine on the iPhone store, as it is to this day. But this was before the big guys were making a lot of. I'm trying to think of the like Supercell, some of the largest app developers now. They didn't exist at the time.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of people just throwing up random games, and then sometimes they
Exactly.
would stick, the Angry Birds, the
The
Flappy
Flappy
Bird.
Bird.
Flappy Bird, that game just got remade by some NFT people. Thank God that looked terrible. I was awful at Flappy Bird. I don't know about you, but I was terrible at that game. Now, the most interesting game on your website to me, minus Rogue Legacy, was actually Band of Bears. Like, the Flash games were pretty fun, though. You have one day to solve everything. I was not able to beat that in the one day. But I'm curious, do you have any plans to bring back Band of Bears 15 years later, or is that really just that's gone for sure?
It's gone for sure,
That's a little
unfortunately.
unfortunate because it was a cute little looking game.
Yeah, it's we actually don't have the rights to it anymore.
Oh, you don't even have the rights for it?
When we started the company, there was several people, and then a few of them split. But we wanted to keep the name. My brother and I, who are now the only people in the company, but to maintain the name of the company, we gave them the rights to Band of Bears.
I think that was
So,
probably a good trade-off.
yeah,
I haven't seen
so we don't
any.
have the rights to make it. I mean, we could make something similar if we wanted to in the future. But yeah, Band of Bear was, I think, when we were naive and we could dream big. But nowadays, it's like, oh, that's a really expensive game to make.
Yeah,
There's no way to make it back then.
back in the day, like Rogue Legacy, there's obviously, I don't know how true these rumors are. You probably know what the question is, because there's rumors, it's all like on Wikipedia, that Rogue Legacy cost $15,000 to make. Is I feel like that's probably like a little false, because there's probably so many different variables you have to worry about, but
So that statement is my fault, our fault. We did, after we released Rogue Legacy 1, we did a GDC talk at the Game Developers Conference, and we said it was $15,000 at the talk. And I mean, I wouldn't say that now. It was $15,000 of just like pure expenses, because we weren't giving ourselves a salary. We were doing a job on the side to pay the development costs, but we weren't including things like rent, hydro or whatever, just to stay alive. We were just thinking of it in terms of salaries and the cost of things like software or I don't know, art assets or whatever you wanted to pay for the development of the game. So I mean, all of that would have been 15,000, but if you just take into account living,
Yeah,
it'd
it how
be
long did Rogue Legacy take to make? Because you started in the company started in 2009, technically. Rogue Legacy came out in 2013, I want to say.
That's right. That's right.
So
Yeah.
when did Rogue Legacy start development?
It only took a year and a half to make Rogue Legacy 1. Even looking back at that, I don't know how we did it, because nowadays our games take 3 4 years. But yeah, we started it in 2010. And then we, well, no, not 2010, 2011, because we were doing the iPhone games in the beginning of 2009. And then once those failed, we're like, okay, we're done. Yeah, we started in 2011 and then finished it around 2013.
That because is it also true that you made back basically all the money from Rogue Legacy, like the expenses and all that? Did you really make it back in like the first day of sales?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh
Yeah.
man, that must have
Rogue
been
Legacy one.
it blew you out of the water. You didn't expect it to do so
Absolutely. Oh
well.
yeah. It felt so good. Well, okay. So we kind of had an idea that Rogue Legacy 1 had the potential to become big when we put it onto Steam Greenlight. So I don't know if people know what that was, but that was at the time you couldn't get your game on Steam. And the only way you could is you had to go through this sort of democratic voting process. You put it onto Steam Greenlight, which would be like a website where you advertise your game, and they would show it to users. They have to vote whether they liked it or not. And so that was the first sign that we could do well, because we blew through Greenlight. So there were games that were sitting in Greenlight for years, and we were out, I think, in the first 3 months because everybody voted yes on it. So we were very fortunate in that regard, and that kind of gave us an idea that, you know, we could sell well. And fortunately, that carried over to when the game launched.
Now, obviously, the times have changed a lot because anyone can just upload a Steam game now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like having the game be a lot harder to get on the Steam helped it a lot? Like, do you feel like any marketing, like what type of marketing did you do for the game outside of just uploading it on Steam?
The thing is, we didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything at all.
The advertising was Steam Greenlight, and we were very lucky because it went viral. And then websites started posting it, and then people started asking for it, so we whipped up a demo, and then we released it to people, and it just kind of snowballed from there. So, yeah, Steam Greenlight was, like, fantastic source of marketing for us, and it's kind of sad that that's gone, because you got to do it yourself, right? At the time, there was a lot of help from Steam that, unfortunately, now everything's automated now. You kind of have to depend on a publisher, and that's why all these indie publishers have kind of popped up.
Yeah, there's a lot of indie publishers, and I imagine the probably incredible funds from Rogue Legacy allowed you to not worry about a publisher while making other games.
Well, okay, so we made Rogue Legacy 1 without a publisher anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it did allow us... So if Rogue Legacy 1 failed, yeah, there's high chance that we couldn't make anything else without a publisher, but there's an equally high chance that we would have just stopped making completely, like publisher or not. But I will agree that the success of the game did allow us to not have to use a publisher for our future games, for better or for worse. Like we even to this day, we still consider, should we use publishers for our next games? Because while I think, like, I'm proud of the games we make, I still think our marketing chops can use work. And so, like, every time we release a game, even after the success of Rogue Legacy 2, we asked ourselves, if we went with a publisher, like, would they have sold more copies for us? You know, we don't really know because we've never used a publisher before.
Did you do any different marketing strategies for Rogue Legacy 2? Or did you just kind of do the exact same thing where you're like, let's just see what happens?
No, we couldn't do that. So after Rogue Legacy 1, we did the exact same thing for our second game, which was Full Metal Furies. And that game did not do well. So when we released, or when we were going to release Rogue Legacy 2, there was no way we could do what we did for the first one, because that would, to us, would have been a guaranteed failure. So, also 9 years later, the market's changed completely. But we did do a lot of different things. We actually paid for Twitch streamers to play the game. I think that helped us a lot. They're very expensive.
I've had that conversation. Like, I've been told that, like 5,000 viewers would cost like $7,000. Was that kind of similar in your case, or was it a little bit cheaper?
I can't. Okay, so the thing is, we hired a PR company to find
right streamers that fit the mantra, I guess.
Yeah, and so I don't really know what. I can't remember what the view counts were for some of the streamers, but they were more than I was expecting.
They were.
Like, I don't want to give away numbers because.
Yeah, you don't need to share numbers at all, but I can understand. Like, I'm not like a giant streamer or anything like that. And even when I tell other streamers, like, oh, I'll get like, you know, a few $100, they're like, oh, you're really selling yourself short. And I'm just like, am I? Like, that's a lot of money.
I can't say that they're not worth it because they helped us. Like, the streamer population really. Because the thing about streaming is, it's not just you want to hit the big ones so that the other, like, other ones will start to play it as well. And that kind of happened with Rogue Legacy 2. So we're grateful to the PR company that helped us choose the streamers, because it did.
Streamers can. They can. Yeah. I think that's how I actually found Rogue Legacy 2. I saw a streamer playing it and I was just like, wow, this game actually looks incredible. So I just bought it up and I was like, okay, then I played it and stunk. And then I learned there was a Rogue Legacy 1, of course, which I will ask, how does it feel that some people, because, you know, roguelites have absolutely taken over. There's There's roguelites for everything. Running a kitchen, Balatro of poker. How does it feel that some people, I've had people tell me this, that Rogue Legacy is one of like the grandfathers in roguelites with like Spelunky, FTL, Binding of Isaac, one of the early pioneers.
I mean, just by looking at the dates, I would agree. Because when we made Rogue Legacy 1, there wasn't very much to lean on.
Yeah, right? There was like Binding of Isaac, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's Binding of Isaac and Spelunky were the two big ones. Ironically, those two were not the inspiration for Rogue Legacy 1. I'd say the biggest inspiration as far as roguelikes go would probably have been Dungeons of Dreadmoor, which is a game that's kind of that not many people talk about these days, but it was really, really fun when it came out. I can't remember, what, 2011 or whatever? And that was the game I was playing when I was making it.
That the game no one's ever heard of, because on Wikipedia, obviously Wikipedia is a big help, it was like Binding of Isaac, Spelunky, and I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Dark yeah. Souls was yeah. in there. Is Dark Souls a little bit, I don't know, I was questioning, like, maybe with difficulty, I guess. But
so, okay, Dark Souls was an inspiration for Rogue Legacy, but not its roguelike aspect.
Yeah,
so the project name before it became Rogue Legacy was actually DS2D. And that stood for 2D Dark Souls, or Dark Souls 2D. Because the original plan was to make a Metroidvania.
Oh, and a Metroidvania. What turned you away from that?
It was too expensive.
Too expensive?
It was two of us. It was my brother and I. Yeah. We were the only people working on the game at the time. And so we like planned out what we would need to do to make the game. And we made a brief demo. And we're like, yeah, we can't do this. And the thing about roguelikes is you can build a room and you can use it multiple times because they keep playing the same castle. I mean, Rogue Legacy, of course, ended up being way bigger than we were expecting as well. But I think a Metroidvania would have been even worse.
Yeah, nah, those I've interviewed a couple of them, and they say it's just so hard and complex with all the connecting rooms and all the items that you have to account for.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to implement as much Metroidvania elements into Rogue Legacy 2 as we could. Way more than the first one.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see that. I remember those elements with finding new rooms, then you can't even get there until you progress further and all of that. It was very well done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but like that was the big inspiration for making the second one. We can kind of go back to our roots and add more of what we wanted to originally make way back when we made Rogue Legacy 1. So that was fun for us.
Now, you said it was you and your brother. Was it you and your brother the entire development for Rogue Legacy? When did you hire a few more people? Because I know you're a team of, like, what, five people, six people?
Yeah, for Rogue Legacy 1, it was... been a while. It was my brother and I. So I was the programmer, he was the designer. We hired a fantastic artist, Glaber Kotaki, to provide the pixel art. And then we hired two musicians for the music. Yeah, so of the five, two of them are musicians, one artist, and then a designer and a programmer. Can't do that now.
Yeah, you probably need a lot more people on board for a game, like for any game, really. Those, oh my God, Rogue Legacy. All right, Rogue Legacy. Now, with Rogue Legacy 2, when did you decide you wanted to make a second Rogue Legacy? Was that always on your back of your mind just so you could add the stuff that you wanted, or did it just kind of pop up?
Yeah. After the completing Rogue Legacy 1, we knew we wanted to make Rogue Legacy 2, but we didn't want to make it right away. Because making a game of that size in such a short period of time really, really burned us out. And I just thinking of working on another game in the Rogue Legacy genre made me like feel sick to the stomach. So I was like, okay, we have to make something new. And then we made Full Metal Furies. And then after Full Metal Furies, there was enough time that had elapsed. We're like, okay, let's try to make a sequel to Rogue Legacy. I mean, that was part of the reason. The other part of the reason was because FMF didn't do well, we kind of needed to bank on something more reliable.
Yeah, and having that one first one be so successful, it's like, all right, there's a high probability Rogue Legacy 2 will be successful compared to something completely new again.
We actually didn't think that. It's like, because FMF did so poorly and we were so discouraged by it, I was convinced that Rogue Legacy 2 wasn't going to be successful. I mean, it would do better than FMF, but I wasn't sure anybody cared about Rogue Legacy anymore. And so when we announced it on Twitter, like on April Fool's Day, we were quite surprised by the response by people, because by that time the game had been, it'd been like 6 years, 5 years since the first one, so it's been quite a while.
Did you announce it on April Fool's Day intentionally so people thought you were maybe joking just in case the reception was bad?
We did. Well, not because people, we weren't going to backtrack on it, because by that time the game had already been in development for like a year. But we did intentionally do it on April Fool's Day, just to play with people. It was just to have a little bit of fun, just to see how people would react. I wouldn't do it again, because a lot of people were upset. So, because they're like, "Oh, this isn't real," and we're like, "Okay, but yeah, we should have seen that coming."
Yeah, but it was worth it for sure. Do you feel, how valuable, I guess I could say, was early access to you? Because I know Rogue Legacy 1, probably early access was not really a thing back then, I imagine. So how big was it to have it in Rogue Legacy 2?
I've been asked that before. My answer is always, we would not have been able to make Rogue Legacy 2 if we were not in early access. The number of, just because the amount of feedback that we received, not just for balancing, but for like bug fixes and stability issues, because Rogue Legacy 2 has a lot of large systems that really play with each other. And the only way we could have ever possibly polished those to the point where they worked properly was if we had a large group of people playing it at any one time. So it did help us with, you know, this idea is not good enough. That idea, you know, is good. We should maybe try to add more of that. But it was also like, oh, because with Rogue Legacy, there's lots of scenarios where, you can't test something unless you run into that scenario, right? So for example, if I have a specific relic or two specific relics that might conflict with one another, I won't know it until a player gets those two relics. And that doesn't happen all the time with these kinds of games. And so the fact that we would have like hundreds of people playing it all at once, or even thousands of people, they would run into that like on the day we released those patches. So that was indispensable, absolutely.
Because I know a lot of people, there's always some weird gamers out there who are like, they will not support a game in early access. But I'm with you. I think it's a very valuable thing to have, because you have your dedicated player base helping you find some bugs and get more patches out and everything. So what do you think was the hardest thing to develop with Rogue Legacy 2 compared to the first one? What was the biggest challenge that you encountered, I guess?
That's actually a good question, because I never really compared the development between the two. The biggest challenge for Rogue Legacy 2... I guess on a technical standpoint, because I wasn't the creative guy, would probably be the biome generation. The biome generation to Rogue Legacy 1 was fairly simple. But we kind of really like took it to the next level with the second one, because we have a bunch of biomes that are not just, it's not just the same biome with different rooms. They were completely different shapes. Right, like there's Axe Mundi, which just goes left to right, and then there's the tower that just goes bottom to top, and so that meant the algorithm for generating those kinds of castles, those kinds of biomes had to be very, very flexible, and that was surprisingly difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine everything looked good, because like I noticed, I didn't get to play the first one, but I've seen it, and the art style is, you know, a little bit similar, but it looks more in depth with some animations, especially like in the background, the movement looks smoother. The whole art in general just looks, it looks a lot nicer. So I was just thinking, like, it must have been harder, most definitely, because the game is obviously bigger. Now, what about trying to balance and figure out good meta progression? Because I didn't play the first one, but was the first one similar with the meta progression and like all the upgrades that you had compared to the second?
Well, with the first one, there wasn't very many Metroidvania elements, so it wasn't as, I don't want to say linear, because you could, with the right set of relics, you can break the sequencing to Rogue Legacy 2 in any way you want. But with Rogue Legacy 1, it was like you can go to anywhere, and the only thing that was blocking you was the difficulty of the enemies. So you just had to grind out till you're strong enough to continue forward. So it's the meta progression is very different between the two of them. For the second one, again, because we wanted to go back to those more Metroidvania roots, it was, I think, a lot more fun creatively to make. It also allowed us to emphasize more on the story, because with the first one, you don't know where you're going. You can go anywhere you want. So the story was basically just some journals you picked up along the way. But this one, we had, interactions. I mean, it's still journals, but it was interactions between the different characters in the game. So it was, I don't know, it was different. I wouldn't say it was harder. It was more fun for us and it was more work, but I wouldn't say it was particularly hard because we kind of knew
You knew what you
because
were doing with it.
and the first one was so limited that it wasn't hard to improve on that, I don't think.
Now, is there anything you didn't want to replicate? Like that we talked about, maybe some harder stuff with the biomes, but is there something that you did in Rogue Legacy 1 that you were like, let's make sure this does not happen in Rogue Legacy 2?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing that comes to mind is the way we did the art. So with Rogue Legacy 1, we did pixel art. And so it's completely 2D. And the thing is, you have a character and you can swap your equipment with different equipment. And the way we did that for Rogue Legacy 1 is every single animation had to be redrawn with that different piece of armor set. Because we didn't do any like tweening animations, it was frame by frame drawn. And it was a ton of work for our artists. And with Rogue Legacy 2, we wanted to expand even more on that. And the only way we could have done that is we converted the game to 3D. So now, like it's 2.5D, so it's 3D just on a front-facing plate. And it allowed us to just put on pieces of equipment and they would just hook to the bones of the animation and we wouldn't have to redraw everything. So I knew right from the get-go when we were making Rogue Legacy 2 that this was the number one technical issue we had to overcome. Otherwise, we would be limiting our creative output. We'd be like, no, this is too expensive. Don't add the different classes. Limit the animations if we went with the old hand-drawn way.
Now, you have a lot of classes in the game and a lot of different difficulty enhancers with New Game Plus. How does it feel seeing people absolutely dominate the game on like New Game Plus 22?
It feels good. I mean, it means people really, really enjoy the game and they want to keep playing it. It is, I mean, it's not a surprise because, like, the first week into early access, there are already people way better than us. So we got used to that even before the game was finished development.
Yeah, I know developers always say it feels great to see someone just dominate the game. What do you think is like the highest difficulty enhancer you could get to in Rogue Legacy?
I mean, I haven't beaten the game yet.
You haven't even been, well, you've made it, so you don't have an obligation to
I've
beat
played
it.
every like section as I worked on it, but as like a complete start to finish, I've tried, but I'm really busy, and I think the furthest I've gotten is I've beaten Enoch, which is like the third boss, and that's about it.
I mean, yeah, you're busy, you're working on other games, I imagine. You know how the story ends. You made it, but yeah, it's
My
always fun
brother,
to.
he's beaten it like three, four times every time we test it. Like every time we release a new version for like a new console, we have to play it from start to finish, and that's usually left up to him because he's much better at the game than I am.
Now, speaking of consoles, one thing I love about Rogue Legacy 2 is how you can basically just play it anywhere, Steam Deck, Switch, PlayStation, Xbox. Was there a hardest platform to get it on, or were they all relatively simple? Oh, I want to hear this one.
We all know it's Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, it took the
It
longest too, I think.
yeah, oh for sure. It's so actually the longest one would have been the PlayStation, but that's actually not the hardest one. There were some licensing issues which made the PlayStation one come out late, but the hardest one technically was definitely the Nintendo Switch. The Xbox, to its credit, was super, super easy to develop. Like, we got it running about 3 weeks. And then it took us 8 months to get the Nintendo Switch running to the point where we wanted it. I mean, we could have released it earlier, but
It wouldn't have been up to your standards. You wanted it to be perfect.
Well, we originally planned it for 30 frames a second. And then what happened was, after a bit of optimizations, we got to like 45. And we're like, well, we're halfway there. We might as well just do 60. And that remaining 15 frames was just an absolute nightmare. That was like another 7 months. Like, the first month was 45, and then 7 months, get it to 60.
Was it just because the Switch hardware is like so old, you have to account for it being like in handheld mode and all that?
Yeah, it was like, if I'm not mistaken, the Switch uses hardware from 2013.
Oh my god.
And that's Rogue Legacy 1. Rogue Legacy 1 came out in 2013. So to get Rogue Legacy 2 running at that frame rate for the Switch was definitely a challenge. We're very proud of it. I'm so proud of the team for managing to squeeze it out. And I think the fans appreciate it. We've read a lot of good things about the Nintendo Switch port.
That's always good to hear, because people always say Switch is an annoying one just to like get a key to get it up there and whatnot. And I imagine just optimizing is horrible. But what about, okay, this one's going to be interesting because I found this out yesterday, but someone did put a port of Rogue Legacy 2 on mobile, if you were aware of that. I think it got taken down immediately. What's the story there?
I don't know. We just got somebody on our Discord saying, hey, this guy's selling it on the iPhone. And we're like, what? How do you do that? And yeah, we contacted Apple, and Apple was
They just took it down immediately?
No, they were like, you have to talk to the guy about it. Oh. And if he doesn't respond, then we'll do something about it. So we communicated with the person, and they just took it down. So I have no idea what was going on with that. I don't know how it happened. I didn't even download it. Like, I don't know if it runs. I can't imagine.
You can't imagine playing Rogue Legacy with a little phone?
Well, it's like, because you need touchscreen.
Touchscreen controls. So you wouldn't port Rogue Legacy 2 to mobile?
Well, we ported Rogue Legacy 1 way late. But that took a lot of time. A lot of creative decisions. How do we want to do the buttons? How do you want to do the input? That's why I don't understand how this one would work. But I didn't feel comfortable buying it, installing it. So it's a big mystery to me. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I was intrigued also, because I saw the Reddit post and everything got taken down. It looked like it was in Russian. But
yeah, it was a Russian person.
I was very curious on how they would get those touchscreen buttons to work. Now, do you have any more plans for Rogue Legacy 2 with like major updates or anything?
Well, I mean, it's been... I think the last update, and the game's come out for 2 years. And I think the last update was a year ago, maybe a year by now. So we're not really looking to do anything else with Rogue Legacy 2. Whether there'd be a sequel, Rogue Legacy 3, in the future, I can't say. I can say we're not working on that right now. We're happy with the sequel, and so if we did do Rogue Legacy 3, we would want it to be as big of a leap as 2 was to 1. So what that entails, don't know. Maybe full 3D. I don't know.
That'd be not a lot of work.
Yeah, but it's not something we're really in the cards for right now.
Is there anything in the cards over at Celador Games that you're sneakily making? You don't got to share anything if you don't want to, but anything in the works?
There wasn't. We actually took an extended period off, and we only started working again recently. So yeah, we are working on something. We're still kind of in the prototyping phase, so definitely
nothing to share for quite a while, because those prototypes take a while, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see if it. I mean, it's still at the point where it could be canceled, right? It just might work out. So yeah, that's about as far as we're at right now.
Yeah, you know, just one idea after another. You just throw them out there and test.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now here's a. I guess I got one more Rogue Legacy 2 question I could ask, and it's the physical ports. Because you did have some physical copies for the game back in May. I imagine you probably just had, you know, reached out to other people and they did that for you. But do you feel like getting physical copies is worth the investment? Because I imagine it's not a cheap thing to do.
So the only reason... Yeah, so you're right. We have a company called Limited Run that specializes in this, that is doing it for us. The only reason why we're doing it again this time is because the first one also went through Limited Run and it was fairly successful. So hopefully this one can replicate that success. But yeah, as far as costs and everything, we just leave it to them.
Oh, they care. They take care of everything. Because I checked on it. Because I saw the Rogue Legacy 2. Because I like collecting physical games, as you can clearly see behind me. And I was on limited run, so I guess you'll be happy to know. But it said Rogue Legacy 2 sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. Completely wiped. So would you ever do it again in the future?
I don't think that's how limited run works.
Oh, yeah. I guess that does make sense. Limited run. You only get a limited amount of time.
So if we did, I don't know. We would have to talk to them. But even though the first one was successful, we probably would not do that again.
Yeah, you know, so, it's limited. Now, I guess we can... I don't got too many more questions, but Rogue Legacy 2, we beat that one. That was great. What do you feel could be the most important aspect, though, towards helping a game succeed in such a saturated market now? Because you've been in the industry for 15 years. You've seen it grow and evolve so much. What do you think is the most important part?
I don't know. My opinions of games is probably the opposite of what a lot of developers are perceiving these days. Like nowadays, it's more sequels, more safe. But I've always felt, at least for the indie scene, because very different from AAA, that you need to set yourself apart. And the way you do that is through the creativity of the game. So like games like Blatros, no one's seen that before. It's a roguelike poker game.
It's beautiful. It's so simple, but they execute it so well.
Exactly. And I find that more and more these days with indie games, if you do the same thing, it's a good chance you don't necessarily fail, but you won't succeed as well as you could have, right? So that's why Rogue Legacy 2 was a bit of a risk for us. When we made Rogue Legacy 2, we were like, it's not just going to be Rogue Legacy 1.5. Or not even Rogue Legacy 2. We wanted it to be like Rogue Legacy 3. We wanted it to be really, really different. Pretty much bury the first one so that there's no reason to play the first one. And that was the only way we thought that we could succeed. Because, you have to separate yourself. I see a lot of games that come out. I don't want to name names, but they'll make a game, they'll do really well, and then they'll sort of release the sequel shortly after, 1, 2, 3 years later. And it's pretty much the same as the first one, just maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit more content, and they just don't do as well.
Yeah, that extra content could have just been like DLC to the first game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but if you do it differently, like you take a look at Risk of Rain 1, and then you look at Risk of Rain 2, where it goes from 2D to complete 3D, it's a completely different change, and the second one absolutely, I think, eclipsed the first one in terms of sales.
Oh, yeah, I feel like Risk of Rain 2 is probably one of the biggest games out there for roguelites, and then they went backwards with Risk of Rain Returns and made the first one again, which is crazy. The Risk of Rain developers, the original ones, just got hired by Valve, so they're right living their best life. Are there any games you've been playing lately? Are you out enjoying life outside?
So I'm just trying to think if there's any recent games. I did play Helldivers 2.
Everybody was on Helldivers, it seems like. Yeah, Helldivers was great.
But I only started that recently, and I finally had the time to play Elden Ring. But I'm not just playing Elden Ring, I'm playing it with my brother, because apparently there's a co-op mod where you can play the game from start to finish. With
Who's
people,
the carry so... in Elden Ring, you or your brother?
We both equally suck at the game. I don't think there's such a thing as a carry in a Dark Souls game.
Yeah, I did listen to a little bit of a podcast from a few years ago, and in the podcast they asked you what you were playing, and you even said, I want to play Elden Ring, but you didn't have the time. So I'm glad to hear that you finally got around to Elden Ring 2 years later. You're a little bit... Are you going to play the DLC?
Well, yeah, I haven't. Okay, so we actually played Elden Ring, and then I stopped for like half a year. And then the DLC came out, and I'm like, I really should finish this. And then we started again. So this is our second attempt at Elden Ring, but we're much further now with that. I'm like 40 hours in, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to complete it. But yeah, DLC we're prepared for.
Elden Ring's the big game. I mean, I love Elden Ring. No smaller indies out there, the Balatros.
Yeah, I mean, I played Balatros. I played... that's what I'm trying to think of, any recent indie games that I've played. I really, really liked Cobalt Core. So that's one that...
Oh, that's the... The turn-based one, right? In space with the space. Cute little animals.
Yeah. Cute little animals. I really like that one. I really like the writing. I love the characters. The music's fantastic. It's one of the easier roguelikes, so I feel like it's really accessible for people who are turned off by the difficulty that roguelikes have. But I recommend that one. I enjoy that one.
I love Cobalt Core as well. And yeah, I think that was really all the questions. You absolutely murdered all my questions, but I loved learning the rich history of Rogue Legacy and Rogue Legacy 2, so I appreciate you taking the time and joining the podcast.
Yeah, anytime. No, again, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. And everyone listening, thanks for listening to this 8th episode. If you have anything you want to say to people, just say it now. What you want to sell?
Sell? I wish I knew there was a time to sell, because unfortunately we're still working on something. But yeah, I mean, I hope people just keep looking forward to what we're making. It's going to be different this time. It's unfortunately not Rogue Legacy 3, which I know some people will be disappointed with. But we like for us, unless we're having fun making games, we're not going to do it. And trying something new is like challenging ourselves to do new things is what we enjoy.
That's always a respectable way, I'd say. If you're not having fun, don't even bother. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thank you again to Kenny for joining us. And we will see you next time. Goodbye. Thanks for listening or watching this episode of Interview in Indies. Big shout out again to Kenny Lee for joining us on the show. And if you're an indie game developer and you want to get on this show, shoot me a DM on Twitter or email me. And if you want to support the show and get the episodes a few days early, subscribe to us on Patreon. Thank you again for listening or watching, and we'll see you next time.